Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. This is Theology Thursday. Typically, we look at the news of the day from a Christian worldview. Today, we look at the source of the Christian worldview, God's Word. In the Bible, sometimes they count it by individuals. Count how many people are in this room. You'd count everyone, men, women, and children. Sometimes they count it just the males. Sometimes they count it only the males of a certain age. So judging over tens could mean have a judge over every 10 people. So that table right there would have one judge, and there'd be another judge, and there'd be another judge here. So it could mean a judge over every 10 people, or it could mean, as often the Bible does, a judge over every 10 males, including children, or over 10 male heads of households, or by extension then, over 10 families. I'll give you an example of two of these conventions. In 1 Chronicles 23:3, God had them numbering the people, and they numbered the Levites. And that verse says, "Now the Levites were numbered from the age of 30 years and above, and the number of individual males was 38,000. So this leaves all the girls, all the adult women, and even the young men uncounted. All right, so how many do you have? We have 38,000, not counting the women and children and young men. This custom carried over into the New Testament. Remember, Jesus took the loaves and the fish, and he fed the multitudes on two occasions, Matthew 14 and Matthew 15. The first was 5,000, then it was 4,000. And in Matthew 14, 21, "Now those who had eaten were about 5,000 men besides women and children." In the next chapter, verse 38, "Those who ate were 4,000 men besides women and children." So if you try to figure out how many people were there, well, you make some calculation, come up with some number of how many people actually ate. So the judges over 10, what it would be is they would each have a jurisdiction of 10 families, that is, 10 households. Today, if we were to implement this, it would be like a judge for every block. Let's say the average block has 10 houses on it. Depending on the size of the blocks, maybe in a rural area, it might be right around the four sides of the block. Or in metropolitan areas, it might be one side of the street, one end of one block would be 10 houses. Maybe there's five houses on your block, and across the street there's five more. Those 10 houses. There'd be a block judge, and he would judge the families in those 10 houses. That's how that would work. And then from that point, a hierarchy builds, a hierarchy of judges. These entry-level judges handle only cases within their jurisdictions, and only cases that are not severe. For example, a kid on the block steals a bicycle from his neighbor. The entry-level judge can hear that case. And we'll see that as we go up the hierarchy of judges, their jurisdiction will increase and the severity of crimes they can deal with will increase. Now, the hierarchy can also go down, though. Let's say in a family, Cheryl and I, we have a bunch of boys, all boys. We don't know how to have girls. We have a bunch of boys. But in a family, you might have 4, 5, 6, 10 people in a family. And the head of that household is like the judge of the family. And if there's some problem that needs correction or discipline, the father implements justice and metes out the discipline. Let's say the father found out that his son stole the neighbor's bike. Father finds out about it, and he says, "You give that bike back, and you pay restitution over and above, and you're getting a whooping," and he gives him a whooping. right? And then the judge of the block finds out about it. He says, oh, that was Jerry's kid. That kid's not going to take another bike. And the judge realizes that justice was served. So even at that low level of a block judge, he can delegate justice to the family members. But let's say a kid on his block steals a bicycle from a kid across town. Then does he judge that case? The crime is outside of his jurisdiction. It spans a couple jurisdictions. So that case then would go up the ladder a bit, and it would be dealt with by another judge. Or if someone in his jurisdiction committed a heinous crime, like a kidnapping or a rape or a murder, then no capital case would be decided by one of these entry-level judges. So as a population grows, then the management of all these judges will become difficult. Because if you live on an island with 40 families, well, you have four judges, no problem. But if you have a nation of millions or tens of millions or hundreds or maybe even a billion like China, then that calls for an hierarchy of judges. So with some exceptions, when a judge would be promoted so that you could have judges who supervise other judges, you end up with a supervisory judge who can have up to 10 judges under him, and each of them would have 10 families or potentially even 10 judges under them, and that's the general model. The exception, when you go from a judge over 10 families to, rather than a judge over 10 such judges, you have a judge over 50s and then one over hundreds. And why would you have that? That's sort of like, you know, the system increases by tens. Why jump like that? That seems somewhat erratic. But we have to realize that this system, as introduced by Jethro, was adopted by Moses, implemented by Israel, and approved of by God. So there's probably some wisdom in it. And what would that be? Well, think about being a judge over 10 families. And then in a nation, you need judges at all levels. And you need some judges eventually that will be judges over ultimately millions of people. So how do you train men to eventually get to that place where they're judges with that kind of authority? What we do today is we put people in school. After they go to kindergarten and elementary school, middle school, then high school, then college, then law school. So about 20 years of classroom work, and then we say, okay, now you can be a lawyer. And after you're a lawyer for some long period of time, then maybe you're qualified to be a judge. But by then, you no longer know right from wrong, and you're absolutely unqualified to be a judge. Well, God has a different system, and it's more like the system of apprenticeship, of learning on the job. You get the basics of justice just by growing up, and you could read the law, and you could read the Bible. And then you're a block judge. And you judge just those on your block if somebody stole a bike or one kid hit another kid. Well, out of those entry-level judges, you need higher-level judges. And they will percolate through the system on their way up. And so it's quite a jump to go from just a judge over a certain number of families to now you're a judge supervising other judges at a much higher level. So you go from a judge over 10 to a judge over 50. So you have five judges under you, each of which would have 10 families. And at that point, you learn what it means to supervise men who are judges of families. And you learn that. And there'd be a lot of judges who wouldn't want that promotion. A lot of people like what they do in life, and they're not ambitious. And they say, I just want to do what I do. Let everybody else worry about all these other things. There's a lot of people who wouldn't want that promotion. Right there, that cut would help the leaders decide, you know, who's inclined to be judges and who's not. Then if somebody's a judge over 50s, the next promotion adds a new dimension to their responsibility. Because now they're not only managing judges, but they're managing middle-level managers who are judging others. It's sort of like running Amway or something. And it could get complicated. It could be difficult. It requires sophisticated management skills. And in order to do that, there's this graduated approach. And then once you get to a judge over 100, you've proved your abilities. And then from there on, all the promotions would be by a factor of 10. So you'd be a judge over 1,000 and a judge over 10,000 and 100,000 and 1,000,000 and so on, going up to depending on how large the country is and what the population is. So that in this country, we would have judges over 10 million. You know, we have a population of over 280 million, I think it is, in this country. And so we'd have 28, you know, we have a Supreme Court of 9 justices. We'd have, it wouldn't be a Supreme Court like a jury, but we'd have 28 judges at the federal level. And each of them would have their jurisdictions. And then people would percolate up and the authority would flow downhill. And that's the way the system, as God has recorded in the Bible, that's the way his system works. Now, somebody could say, well, that system is inferior. And I think that if we Republicans and Democrats wrestle with this, we could come up with a better plan. And have at it, you know? See what you can do. Go ahead, knock yourself out. But chances are, no one's going to come up with a better idea. It's a relatively simple idea, and it's easy to implement. Not that there wouldn't be problems. You can't come up with a government that'll function perfectly. You can't do that. Can you have a family that'll function perfectly? No. But that doesn't mean we Christians give up and we say, it doesn't matter what a family is. You could have two men, homosexuals, adopting kids, and that's fine because we're all sinners and we can't have a perfect family. No, that would be ignorant reasoning. That's evil to think that way. But Christians think that way regarding the government. They say, you can't have a perfect government because humans are sinful. Therefore, let the unbelievers determine the structure of government. Let's go with the Republican platform. You say, well, why not go with what God says in the Bible? Well, I never read that, but I read the platform once of the party, and that seemed okay. So, verse 22 in Exodus. And let them judge the people at all times. Then it will be that every great matter they will bring to you, but every small matter they themselves shall judge. So it will be easier for you, for they will bear the burden with you. If you do this thing and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure, and all this people will also go to their place in peace. So as it turns out, the leader of the nation, the political leader, is also the chief judge. He is the one that determines whether or not a particular judge will serve. They serve at his pleasure, at his wish. If he disapproves, he has authority to lead. And so he could appoint a judge or he could remove a judge from office. A lot of Christians say, and even unbelievers, but Christians who reject God's ideas on justice, one of their favorite arguments is they say God's law was only for Israel, or God's law was only for his people, and that's it. That argument is a form of egotism. It's like self-centeredness. Because unless they want to say that God's law was evil, you know, Paul says that God's law was holy, just, and good, right? Are they saying, well, something that is holy, just, and good was only for Israel, not for anyone else? That'd be a pretty stupid argument. As we will find out in the Bible, God will tell us that certain aspects of the law were only for Israel. But they are all the symbolic aspects of the law, like what you need to wear, or what kind of a ritual that you're going to engage in order to affirm God's covenant with you Jews. Some of those things were only for Israel. But do not kidnap, do not murder, do not commit adultery, do not commit perjury. That was for everybody. So when we look at the criminal justice system, the elements that I mentioned earlier, let's say we want to prioritize them. Which part is most important to know? What were they? The law, the crime, the victims, the accused, the witnesses, the evidence, the judge, the verdict, the sentence. If you were to prioritize those elements, what's the most important? Well, knowing the law is very important. Without knowing the law, it's hard to even define a crime, let alone the punishment of that crime. However, even more important than knowing the law is knowing the judge. That's even more important, as it turns out. It's not what you know, but who you know. And that's especially true when it comes to God. If men live on an island and they know the law, but no one on the island knows a judge, and there's no judge, well, then they can't have criminal justice. They can't have a functioning system. If men live on an island and they know the judge, but are themselves somewhat ignorant of the law, well, they could still have criminal justice, because criminal justice can be enforced from without by the judge. Christians often say you have to change men's hearts. Well, if the man wants to sell drugs to kids on the playground, I don't care about his heart. Not at that moment. That's not my concern. My concern is to stop him. I care much more about his fingers and his feet and his eyes than I care about his heart. All right? And that is what God presents in the Bible. And a lot of times you could get to men's hearts through their extremities, believe it or not. That's why God talks about an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth and a hand for a hand and a foot for a foot. But if men live on an island and let's say one man pays a farmer for the harvest from an acre of land, and he says, I'll give you these coconuts for 1 acre of sugar cane. And the guy says, okay, give me the coconuts. And so that's their deal, their contract. And then a couple weeks later, sugar cane's growing, and the guy pitches his tent on the acre. And the landowner comes and says, what are you doing here? He says, I paid you for this acre. He said, no, you paid me for the sugar cane. No, I paid you for the acre. And the guy says, get out of here. So they have a fight and they go to the judge. And he doesn't really know the law. But the judge is a good judge. And so they can have a criminal justice system. And the judge, in giving his good verdicts, is making known the law, what the law is. The judge is the most important part of the criminal justice system. If you know the law, but you don't know a judge, then you've hit a dead end. If you know a good judge, he can teach you the law. And a criminal justice system begins with a judge, a good judge. And that's why, as Moses is getting ready to roll out this criminal justice system, he starts with the judges. This chapter, what are the qualifications? What are their jurisdictions? How are they appointed? And even, as we'll see, is there any appeal process for judges? Verse 24. So Moses heeded the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. Now, the very first time you implement it, you don't have the benefit of men learning and growing through the system. You just need judges. And so Moses went to the leaders of the tribes, and he knew, you know, of the tribe of Dan, he knew some of the elders, some of the key men, and the tribe of Reuben and Gad and Manasseh. He knew some of these guys, and he went to the ones that he trusted the most, that he thought best understood justice. And he said to them, I'm appointing you as a judge in your tribe over 1,000. You appoint men under you, 10 judges over 100, and instruct them to appoint judges under them of 50s and under them of 10s. And so in the first implementation of the system, it goes top down. But then eventually men begin to grow from the bottom up as generations come. So Moses, in doing this, he's now got thousands of judges throughout the whole nation of Israel. Question, how much do you think he paid them? You think he paid them an average of 4 times the average income of an Israelite? No. How much do you think he paid him? Minimum wage? He didn't pay him anything. It's an honor to be a judge. It's an honor. You live with 10 families in your little neighborhood, on your street, in your dead end, wherever you live, and you're asked to be the judge. So if somebody steals a neighbor's bike, you look into it. You say, you got to give back that bike plus pay him what it was worth. Restitution, you got to pay double. Stole a $200 bike, give back the bike plus $200, plus you're going to get one lash. So you're the judge. It's an honor to be the judge. And if you do a good job, you may be promoted. And other people may call upon you to help serve your community. That is an honor. And judges will serve for no pay. They will. That absolutely would happen. Now, how about as you go up the ladder, the higher level judges? Do you think when you get up to a judge over 10,000 or 100,000 or a million or a federal level judge, you think he'd be like a 23-year-old guy who's trying to build his business? Probably not, right? Who would he be like? Well, we might have a couple men in this room that could be qualified at that level. And how many cases, what would their docket be like? Well, nowadays, you know, they say, we used to have a saying when I was growing up, it was just the saying. It was, don't make a federal case out of it. Well, today, if you're in kindergarten and a boy gives a little smooch to a girl sitting next to him on the cheek, what happens? A federal civil rights lawsuit. And so now it's not just a saying or a joke. It's real. Don't make a federal case out of it. But even if it's a minor issue, it's got to go to court. And somewhere there's a courthouse that they're going to deal with these millions of cases a year. Well, in this system, who's going to deal with most of the cases? They'll be dealt with on the block level, in the neighborhood, in the community, in the town. And if you're a judge over 10 families, you think you're going to have a heavy docket, right? You're not going to have a heavy docket. You might go all year with one or two minor incidents. If you're a judge and you've got five of those judges under you, you're not going to have a lot to do. If you do that for 5 years, you might have three or four stories of things you had to do. And as you go on up, the system takes care of the burden. It's built into the system. That's the idea. Jethro said, this will relieve the burden on both you and the people. So the government doesn't have the burden and the people do not have the burden. Nowadays, if you're charged with some crime, there's a huge burden on you because you have to now go and stand in line. And you get to court and you find out where your courtroom is and you read the docket on the TV screen and you see there's 64 cases that morning. And you're trying to get to work by 10 o'clock. I mean, I've been in court plenty of times. I know some of you have also. And that's the way it is. And you sit there and the system just grinds you down. And you become so weary. It wears you down. That's exactly what Jethro was trying to point out the problem would be. And so you don't have to pay men to be judges. When you pay men to be judges, you develop another problem. Because they might be in it for the money. Especially, you know, the argument, you could hear the liberals saying it, right? If you don't pay good money, you won't get good men, right? That's why we have to pay public school teachers so much more than the average income of other people. And that must be why we have such great public school teachers, I guess. Kids can't even read hardly, so many kids, and they can't do math, that I know. So it turns out, the more money you pay, the worse results you get. You know, in this country, and I'm using education as an example, we have states in America that pay the most per pupil per year and states that pay the least. And let me ask you this. Let's say you take the three states that pay the most per pupil, like probably be California, New York, and Massachusetts or something. And then you take the states that pay the least, be North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana. Okay, which if you compare the academic results on standardized tests of North and South Dakota with California and New York, which would have better results? You guys know? North and South Dakota. Not only is that true, and that's been documented in front pages of every newspaper in the country, but what if you look at spending for education around the world, country by country? Do you know that the countries that spend the most per pupil are at the bottom of the academic performance list, and the countries that spend the least are at the top? That's true. Why would it be true? Well, one reason is you'd get people who really want to do it, people who feel a ministry to children, not people who think, you know, I could get a job and I could work, get off 3 months out of the year, straight vacation, and quite a lot of vacation during my work 9 months, and make significantly more than the average person who works 12 months a year in Colorado or mostly anywhere in the country. That's pretty appealing. You might not give a rip about kids, or you might like kids just the same as anybody likes kids. Oh, they're fine, but you're not going to take but you're not going to take time out of your from yourself. You know, you're not going to spend a few weeks in the summer helping the kids who are having a hard time for free. You're not going to do that, are you, if you're in it for the paycheck? So once you start paying judges, then there's another motive, money. And judges have a lot of influence by the nature of their position. So if you are bringing men into the government by the thousands and tens of thousands and motivating them with money, then they could end up serving money, and they pervert the system to where they can use the law and the courts as a weapon against the innocent to extract money from you. And now you could be totally innocent, some minor issue, and you're going to court. And unless you pay some lawyer $10,000 or more, you're going to be guilty. And you could even have the judge. I'm thinking of one case right now. You could even have the judge say, look, I know it's a ripoff and I know it's cost you a lot of money, but look, just pay up. You think that ever happens in this country of ours? Never happens. Because the judges work for their paycheck. And if they weren't paid, they wouldn't judge. So that tells us what's wrong with the system. Our system is fundamentally broken. So the block judge doesn't need to get paid, and neither does the federal judge. Being a judge should not be a career. If it's a career, you know how much crime you need to sustain a paid judiciary? You need a lot of crime. Let me break into my own broadcast. Hi, this is Bob Enyart. I hope you are enjoying this program. If you are, tune in tomorrow for the conclusion right here on Bob Enyart Live.